The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up when you did it. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. It's like an amendment, don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. This is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date is November the 20th. It is 2015. Just 10 days away till my date of birth. I don't even like to count birthdays anymore. But yeah, got so much work to do and so little time to do it in. So welcome to today's program. Again, it's a Friday afternoon broadcasting from North Carolina. Today, I just have a few news items that I would like to share with you and, of course, my commentary for whatever it is worth. But if you would like to get in on today's program and offer a news story or some commentary on the news that I'll be sharing with you, you can do so by giving us a call at 641-715-3660. Again, the conference line number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. That's 549-032-POUND. *6-1 will get you in the conference queue, and I will certainly bring you up on air. You can also call us on the studio line. The studio line is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Interesting week of broadcasting. Had a couple of guests on the program over the week. Had two social justice activists on the program to talk about different things, but although they were kind of related, I know earlier this week we spoke to Mr. Rosenblum about changing the name of a lake in Washington State, changing it back to its original name, which honored a black man who was a prospector in that area, a miner, so to speak. And they, after he left, they changed the name to Coon Lake. You know, and like Mr. Rosenblum said, he asked people, he was like, "Do we got raccoons in this area or something?" And, you know, so what's up with that name? And, of course, he found out it was meant as a racial slur towards African descendant people. And he started working on getting that name changed and finally has some success. I believe it was last week where the United States Department of, I'm not even sure, I don't even recall what, who's ever in charge of naming stuff and putting these names on maps and whatnot. Well, they finally agreed to change the name after an 8-year battle to do that. We also had an opportunity to talk to a young black activist out of Milwaukee yesterday. Mr. Mays is doing a lot of good work in his community, cop watching, patrolling the streets. He started a F Your Flag movement in support of another activist who had hosted a demonstration or put on a demonstration where he was stepping on the U.S. flag, and he got arrested for it and all that. And so Mr. May said that, you know, he started a movement on social media where they were doing the same thing in support of First Amendment speech rights. Not that we rely on a piece of paper to give us rights, because certainly we have been endowed rights by our creator. And I don't think anybody on this earth created other beings on this earth. So, no, our power, our rights do not come from you or come from your piece of paper or whatnot. But we like to throw that in there, to throw it up in your face, to show you what kind of hypocrites you are. And so we talked to him about a number of other things that's going on. Black Buy-In Collective and boycotting. Isn't Black Friday coming up? Is that this weekend? I know next week is Thanksgiving, right? Next Thursday. So I don't know, because I don't, you know, do a whole lot of shopping or anything like that. I don't sit around waiting for stuff to go on sale so I can buy me a big screen TV or nothing like that. Computer equipment, yeah, I'm always, but I got my sources. But anyway, Black Friday coming up. We talked about the need to deprogram the masses, because even after they left that rally, Justice or Else rally, and was told, you know, that we want to recycle black dollars among black businesses, and those people left and immediately spent their money with non-black businesses. And so I guess they couldn't wait, I don't know, to get something to eat. I don't know. But you know, that just goes to show you how strong the programming that we have to combat. That's what we up against. Is the masses have been programmed just like everybody else. It's not anything unique to black people and whatnot. And you think about the number of white people who decry the fact that corporations are using their money to influence politics in a way that is not, you know, objective, in a way that's not, it's just not right to everybody else. They have more undue influence on these legislators because of their money. They even get to write legislation. So when we talk about those people who talk about the ills of corporate America and whatnot, those very same people will go out there on Black Friday. You will see them in line trying to get the latest iPod pad or iPod or Apple phone or whatever it is they looking to buy, you know. So those same people. So there, it's not just black people that got a problem with engaging in behavior that is counter to things that they have talked about, you know, as being conscious folks or coming into consciousness. Some of us still, you know, we just can't pass up that sale. So we'll see. We'll see, you know, if the Black Friday boycotts will have any impact or will be impacted by the call by many people in the black community to start boycotting unless we get our demands addressed in terms of police violence, police murder, police terrorism. What they call mass incarceration, which, you know, I call mass enslavement, a continuation of slavery. It's just worse than it's ever been on this continent than times in the past. So we'll be looking to see, you know, what the sales figures are like after Black Friday and after the Christmas shopping season. And we'll see if people heeded that call. So lots of things that you can check out in the archives on blacktalkradionetwork.com, not just for this program, but for the programs of many of our media partners and independent media producers that stream through the network. So these are some of the news items that I would like to review with you today. Demonstrations, of course, we talked about this, I think, yesterday. Demonstrations are continuing in Minneapolis over the extrajudicial killing of the young black male, Jamar Clark. Jamar Clark, who some witnesses say was handcuffed when he was shot in the head. A report, I believe we listened to an audio report that said that he had a number of police officers had him on the ground restraining him. And when the other officer, you know, discharged his weapon, striking Mr. Clark in the head and killing him, and then how they hurried up and cleaned up the crime scene. So Of course, those demonstrations and protests are continuing to go on in Minneapolis, in the state of Minnesota. And this Minneapolis police officer, this cop, was caught on film assaulting Jeremiah Ellison. Now, Jeremiah Ellison is the son of Minnesota United States Representative Keith Ellison. And this cop is clearly seen pointing his weapon directly at Mr. Ellison, who had both his hands up in the air, participating in a nonviolent demonstration. And then you have this big burly looking cop, looked like he was going hunting or something. And I guess he was dressed up in camouflage, looks like, and pointing his weapon at this unarmed man who was doing nothing more than exercising his free speech rights and whatnot. He wasn't threatening anyone. The cop, his life wasn't put in danger. So why was he pointing his firearm at this young man? Well, to probably intimidate him. Maybe he just wanted it. Maybe he was just really wanting to pull that trigger, but it's too many witnesses and whatnot. So I guess, he sent a message that way by threatening the young man with the firearm. Now, that's illegal. That's illegal in the state of Minnesota, just like it's in many other states. And I'll talk about that statute. Unless, of course, Minnesota is one of those states that allow cops to operate above the law, don't have to pay it. They don't have to adhere to the laws that they're out there so-called enforcing. Oh, no. We wouldn't want to make them do that now. So I want to talk about that story. Also, yesterday, I think, or it's the day before yesterday, I talked about getting a report from the People's Organization for Progress that Princeton students had staged a sit-in at the president's office. The president of the university, his name is Christopher East Gruber, something like that, East Gruber or Ice Gruber. Anyway, we had heard that they were inside of the office staging a sit-in, but the information I came across today say that they were sitting outside of his office. And they had sat out there for over 24 hours. And among their demands is to remove the name of a former racist president of the United States from campus buildings. Not unlike what is going on down there in Clemson that we have reported on, and a number of other campuses, university campuses. And, I wholeheartedly support what these young people are doing. I support pulling down flags. I support getting rid of these monuments that honor people who are just unindicted criminals, really, is how I look at it. Straight up racists who believed in the myth of white supremacy and whatnot. And so they want to remove Woodrow Wilson's name from some of the campus buildings. This is a former president of the United States. I think he might have been president before they incorporated. I'm not sure. I looked that up. It might have been after they incorporated. But anyway, he's a former CEO of America, and he did some things that just totally incorrect, just totally racist. And I just don't see why anybody would want to allow, these vile, evil men. Men of low moral character to be given places of honor or whatnot. I mean, I know of the reasons that have been given by various people out there. I just don't agree with those reasons. I also can't see the logic in those reasons. I mean, aren't we tired of being terrorized, and whether it's visually or physically, that's the reason why black people suffer from hypertension at a higher rate than other people. I mean, we're just surrounded by, this terrorist symbolism and whatnot. So I support those efforts. I mean, hell, if you're paying money to maintain these campuses, if you're, they making money off of you, whether you playing sports, whatever, if you paid your own tuition, if they getting any kind of taxpayer funds and whatnot, I just don't feel that it is appropriate And I don't think anybody could argue that it is correct to honor people of such low moral character, you know, and to maintain it with tax dollars or university dollars or whatnot. It's just incorrect behavior, and we want to correct incorrect behavior. I mean, that's the whole point of counter-racism, is to correct that which is incorrect, to implement a system of justice. And so that's what I see these movements as being, as just part of a justice movement on those campuses. Now, speaking of justice, another story that caught my eye today, a Kentucky judge is starting to finally, I don't know what the people been waiting on, but you got this Kentucky judge who is starting to garner support behind him as prosecutors are seeking to have him removed from all criminal cases. And that's a report coming to you from Kentucky from the news station WDRB. We'll see if we can get the audio to the video report to play. But on Tuesday, prosecutors started asking Judge Olu Stevens to recuse himself from their cases, and he, of course, has refused to do so. And so they're trying to get Kentucky's Chief Justice. I don't know if he's on the Kentucky Supreme Court or if he's the Chief Justice of that courthouse. I don't know who they're going to. They say Kentucky, so I'm imagining it's the Chief Justice on the Supreme Court of Kentucky. But they're trying to get this man removed from all criminal cases. All right, so but people have been starting to rally around the judge and express their support. And lastly, keeping it with the justice system, prosecutors in Michigan were revealed in emails to have pressured employees in the Michigan State Police Forensic Science Division to falsely classify the origins of THC, which is the active a drug or ingredient that is found in cannabis, also in hash and other, you know, members of the cannabis family. And so they've been trying to get these employees, and I don't know if they were successful in coercing them into falsifying court evidence, all right, about the origins of THC, which was found in hot hash oils and cannabis edibles. So that their whole reason for doing this is so that they could make a new slave out of somebody, and not only make a new slave out of them, but make sure they spend as much time as possible on the prison plantation, slaving away for a corporation, you know, for people to have jobs to incarcerate them and whatnot. I mean, this is an evil, sick society. But again, I have not heard anything about these prosecutors in Michigan being asked to resign, being demanded to resign. Haven't seen any petitions asking for their resignation. I haven't seen the state police go charge them with a crime for interfering. Yes, you can interfere with your own cases. All right. And this is, you know, falsifying records has got to be a crime, right? It's got to be a crime, and then you're asking for the falsification of these records so that you can put somebody into slavery for a long time. These people are criminals, man, and they should be the ones on their way to a prison plantation. This is why people say USA Inc. needs to be dissolved, and we need to start over from the ground up. We need to just fire all of these people. In the courthouse, they can reapply for their jobs, but we need to just start all over. We need to have new elections across the board. All right, get these crooks out of here, man, because they're causing a whole lot of problems for everybody. Most certainly, they're victims. So those are some of the stories that I will just share with you today. Again, if you have any questions or comments, please get those in as soon as possible. I don't plan to stay on air too long, as I'm wrapping up the reports that I'm behind on, and I found some problem with some of our podcast feeds, and so I got to fix those and finish this report for the podcast. But we did put out our report, our station report. We posted that to social media for the digital radio station, Black Talk Radio Network. Looks like we had 10,000 more unique listeners than we had the month before, which would have been September. So in October, we had about 81,000 unique listeners. That's individual listeners who tuned in to the station at some point in time during the month of October. So that's an increase of 10,000 of about 10,000 more people. And, you know, we couldn't be happier because, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to hear it, doesn't make a sound. Well, the same thing could be said about this radio station. You know, if we're broadcasting and there's no one to hear it, you know, are we really making any sounds or whatnot? So happy about that. Happy about the growth to the new listeners that have found us. I hope that this station, you find it to be constructive, and hope that you find the information that's put out over the station to be useful. There's a lot of people that are contributing and involved in this. So, you know, it's always good to see people, you know, utilize the work that we are involved in. And of course, shout out to the donors, those who fund. This is listener supported radio, just like NPR, just like PBS or any other public media that's out there. We are supported by the listeners. We don't take grants from the federal government, from state governments. Don't even seek to even apply. Not getting any kind of grants from the Open Justice or the Open Society Foundation of what's his name? I can't remember that guy's name right now. George Soros. He ain't funding the Black Talk Radio Network. No, it is entirely being funded by our donors, and we appreciate you. We even have some new donors, and I will be sending out an email to all those who have donated. Doesn't matter how much you gave, but you will get a more detailed report sent via email. All right, so let me go ahead and move on with the program. I don't know if y'all have seen the photograph. You may not be on Black Talk Radio Network. You may not have seen the original post, which was on Gawker.com, but you had this cop pointing. It looks like a shotgun to me. Looking, it actually looks like a double barrel shotgun. I can't really tell, and I have not blown up the image to try to identify what sort of weapon this is. But it is a firearm, whether it's a shotgun, double barrel, single barrel. I don't know if it's a rifle. As they are speculating that it's a rifle, but he is definitely pointing it at Keith Ellison's son. So this is coming to you from some protests that were gathered in Minneapolis following the police killing of the unarmed male, Jamar Clark, an unarmed black man. And so this is the report that came to you via the Gawker, and they said, according to activists Wintana Melikan and Al Jazeera America, the photo above shows Jeremiah Ellison, son of U.S. Representative Keith Ellison, holding his hands in the air as police officer points a rifle of some kind towards him. Ellison was one of a group of protesters who congregated outside a Minneapolis police precinct near where a man named Jamar Clark was killed by officers on Sunday. Now, it goes on to say in this report that some protesters were throwing rocks and bricks at officers, according to police. That's according to police, and so, you know, you take that for what it's worth. I don't believe anything that they say. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but if that's the only source of this information, don't believe it. But it says, it went on to write, the writer of this article said that Jeremiah Ellison does not appear to be armed with rubble or otherwise. The elder Ellison, who formally requested Attorney General Loretta Lynch to investigate Clark's death earlier this week, was understandably horrified by the picture. And so he was on Twitter and he said, this photo is agonizing for me to see. My son is peacefully protesting with his hands up. Officer is shouldering gun. Why? Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, I can speculate on why he's doing it as a means to intimidate your son, Representative Ellison. I mean, and that's to intimidate your son. Maybe he, you know, was thinking about pulling the trigger. I don't know. We would have to ask the man who committed the crime. And for those who doubt that this is a crime, I have linked to the statute in Minnesota on their official website for the Office of the Reviser of Statutes. This is a 2015 Minnesota statute. Doesn't mean it was enacted in 2015, but it is in effect in 2015. And it's in there is statute number 609.66, Dangerous Weapons. And it has many different divisions, but let's see if we can find one in here that applies. If I was a prosecutor, what could I charge this cop with for assaulting? This is an assault, in my opinion, for this crime that he committed against this young man who was doing nothing more but expressing what the government says he could do. That is his right, you know, freedom of expression. Freedom to protest, freedom to lodge complaints and whatnot. So this is statute number again is 609.66. This is the Minnesota statutes, says subdivision 1, misdemeanor and gross misdemeanor crimes. A, whoever does any of the following is guilty of a crime and may be sentenced as provided in paragraph B. Number 1, recklessly handles or uses a gun or other dangerous weapon or explosive so as to endanger the safety of another, or section 2, intentionally points a gun of any kind capable of injuring or killing a human being, and whether loaded or unloaded, at or toward another, or 3, manufactures or sells any unlawful purpose for any unlawful purpose, any weapon known as a slung shot or sand club, or 4, manufactures, transfers, or possesses metal knuckles or switchblade knife opening automatically, or 5, possesses any other dangerous article or substance for the purpose of being used unlawfully as a weapon against another, or 6, outside of a municipality and without the parents' or guardian's consent, furnishes a child under 14 years of age or as a parent or guardian permits the child to handle or use outside of the parents or guardian's presence a firearm or air gun of any kind or any ammunition or explosive. See, these things are good to know. So if you live in the city of Minneapolis, you don't want to buy your young children under the age of 14 and under, you don't want to buy them airsoft guns, BB guns, or anything like that, unless you are supervising that child, because if they get caught out there on the street, yeah, that's some charges on them. Let's see, it says that. Let's see, let's jump down to the punishment. A person convicted under paragraph A, which I just read, you know, the different points of paragraph A to you, may be sentenced as follow. If the act was committed in a public housing zone as defined in section 152.01, subdivision 19, a school zone, or as defined in section 152.01, subdivision 14A, or a park zone as defined in section 152.01, subdivision 12A, or to imprisonment for not more than 1 year, or to payment of a fine of not more than $3,000, or both, or otherwise, including where the act was committed on residential premises within the zone described in clause, if the offender was at the time an owner, tenant, or invitee. So we know that don't apply. Let me just continue on down. See. Because you have the felonies. We just read the misdemeanor. So let's check out the felonies. Okay. Whoever does any of the following is guilty of a felony and may be sentenced as provided in paragraph B. Sells or has in possession a suppressor that is not lawfully possessed under federal law. So they're talking about a silencer. Intentionally discharges a firearm under circumstances that endanger the safety of another, or recklessly discharges a firearm within a municipality. And B, a person convicted under this may be sentenced as follows. So I don't think we could slap any felonies on this cop, but certainly he falls under recklessly handles or uses a gun or other dangerous weapon or explosives so as to endanger the safety of another by him pointing that weapon, which is something that gun owners are always taught, especially when I was in the military, man. You always have that weapon pointed towards the ground. You do not have it pointing up, you know, so that if it accidentally discharges, that it could hit somebody and kill them or severely injure them. So, I mean, that's like gun ownership or gun safety 101. You never point a gun at someone unless you plan on pulling that trigger. It's the way I was taught. All right, so intentionally points a gun of any kind capable of injuring or killing a human being, and whether loaded or unloaded, at or toward another. All right, so he certainly falls under those first two. All right, he pointed a gun at a person. It doesn't matter what kind of a gun it was. If we know it was capable of injuring or killing somebody, doesn't matter if it was loaded or not. That's not what the law says. Now, this is what I suspect. I suspect that Minnesota may be like some other states where, you know, you got these police officers, so-called Bill of Rights, where, you know, they get immunity. They get immunity in cases like this. And they'll argue that, oh, he was on the job, he was doing his duties, and if we punish him for violating the law, then he won't be able to do his job. That's basically what they'll tell you. Here we got unarmed a protester. You point your gun. He got his hands up in the air. This is the son of a U.S. senator or representative, so I'm sure he wasn't going to go out there with a gun or a knife or anything like that and seek to do harm to anyone. And we got this big fat camouflage cop pointing a gun at him. Where are the charges? If I was Representative Keith Ellison, well, his son is a grown man. If I was his son, I'd be pressing charges. I would go file a complaint that this cop pointed this weapon at me and put my life in danger. And I would cite Minnesota Statute 609.66 that pertains to dangerous weapons. 609.66. So whether he has immunity or not, let's file the charges. Let's file the charges. Go file the complaint. Take it to the prosecutor, whatnot, and then let them answer the questions on why they are holding this cop above the law if they are not going to charge him. Because this is just recklessness. This isn't being professional. This is outside the realms of professionalism. And you know, we just can't allow these crimes to continue to go unpunished. That's why they keep committing these crimes. So I thought that was an interesting story, and it just goes to the importance of studying law. Something that I think we even talked to Mr. Mays about yesterday, how he said he was studying the law and whatnot. It's a conversation they had on the Lotus Place the other night about knowing the law. And a lot of times we don't even have to. I found that in some states that you don't even have to have the prosecutor convene a grand jury or whether or not they can just do it on probable cause. There's probable cause based on this video, based on this photograph of this cop pointing his weapon at Mr. Ellison, that a crime was committed. Don't need a grand jury for that. Don't need a big long investigation for it either, do you? So, again, you know, we need to use all the tools in the toolbox. All options should be on the table. All right, I'm going to take a station identification break. kick some message music. When I come back, I'll check the phone lines. But then I want to move to the next story about these demands being made by Princeton students. Among those demands to remove the name of former U.S. President, CEO of America, Woodrow Wilson's name from campus buildings. And I support that. I can't think of a logical, I haven't heard a logical answer that makes sense to me on why people shouldn't seek to do these things. All right, maybe you can make me see the logic in it. You're certainly welcome to give me a call. All right, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
See, Lyndon Johnson, he can always raise an argument about law and order because he never talks about justice. But black people fall for that same argument and they go around talking about lawbreakers. We did not make the laws in this country. We are neither morally nor legally confined to those laws. Those laws that keep them up keep us down. You got to begin to understand that. For 400 years she taught you white nationalism and you lapped it up. You taught it to your children. You had your children thinking that everything black was bad. Black cows don't give good milk. Black hens don't lay eggs. Black for funerals, white for weddings. That's white nationalism. Santa Claus. A white honky who slides down a black chimney and comes out white. We tend to equate progress with concessions. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that nigger astronaut, you said we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Clayton Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him? They gave you Walter Washington of Washington, D.C., and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in-between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, telephone number 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. And, of course, just hit star 6 and 1 to come in on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. Moving on to the next story, Princeton University will consider expunging former United States President Woodrow Wilson's name from facilities and school programs after signing a deal with student demonstrators who feel he has a racist legacy. Feel? I don't think they're in their feelings. You know what I'm saying? That's another thing. Paying attention to the words that these people use and to try to make you seem like, you know, you're being unreasonable or you're just all up in your emotions and all up in your feelings and whatnot. They say you getting offended, and children get offended. I just get mad. You know what I'm saying? I get it. I get indignant. I can think of plenty of other words to describe the feeling that I get when I see something incorrect. It's not a matter of me being offended. It's a matter of you being ignorant and practicing racism. That's what it's about. It ain't about my feelings. I don't feel that Woodrow Wilson was a racist. He was a racist, and you know he's a racist. So, I mean, these words, like I was, and this was from a black publication. I'm not going to say the name or anything, because I don't have anything about against the people. I do know it is an independent black media news platform. I have issues with some of the things they classify as news, but I understand what they're doing. You know, they'll publish some entertainment, gossip type stuff, but that's to suck people in to the website, and then hopefully they will get exposed to the other information that is important that they should have. So I understand about baiting people, trying to bait them in, you know, with some butter biscuits or whatever, or some foolishness. But then, you know, right there in their face, once they come to read that foolishness, then they see some other articles that's related to some serious things. So I'm not criticizing them based on the fact that they published some things that, you know, I wouldn't feel like it's newsworthy, but I understand the strategy, and I, you know, maybe that's what they're doing. But they put a video, well, this was an important story, and they, you know, talked about this man who was beaten. You could see him on tased to death, the man that was tased to death in Virginia. In Richmond, Virginia, up in there. Shout out to Tanya Free and Friends, Sister Belinda, and all our friends and media partners in that area. But, you know, y'all might have seen the video of these three cops. First, they go to this man's hotel. He hadn't broken any laws or anything like that. Maybe he was making too much noise. They got a complaint. They said that he was acting strange, so they convinced him to go to the hospital to get checked out, to find out what kind of drug he was under or if his life was in danger. But the moment that he agreed to go with them cops is the moment that his life was in danger right then and there. And it was over for him. All right. Because to get to the hospital, I guess he was having a bad trip or whatever. He's handcuffed in the back of the seat, not under arrest, mind you. He volunteered to go with them, and they taking him to the hospital because, you know, they care about him, so they say. And so he kicks out the back window. So he's having a psychotic episode. Find out later, he tells them, man, I've been snorting cocaine. I've been using cocaine. But he told them that after he got out the car, he ran towards the emergency room that they were taking him to, trying to get in the building. This is all on video. And so they come and they tase him. They don't try to talk him down. They don't try to calm him down. You know, they, all three of them, just start tasing the man. And he says to them, why y'all trying to kill me? I've been using cocaine. Y'all keep shocking me. Why you trying to kill me? You know, he was cognizant enough to know that he was about to die if they kept shocking him, you know, with 50,000 volts apiece all at once. So they finally snatch him up, and instead of taking him into the police, into the emergency room, they throw him in the back of the car, right? And start tasing him again. And they were going to take him to, I guess, the jail. So we saw this on video. So do you know that this publication, in their article, the title they chose was Police Allegedly Tase Individual to Death. You know, something along those lines, saying allegedly. And I'm like, I see this all the time. I'm like, allege nothing. It ain't, they didn't allegedly do nothing. That cop in Minneapolis did not allegedly point that gun at Keith Ellison's son. He did it. We have the we had a photograph showing him. That video, we didn't allegedly see this man being tased to death. We saw it. It wasn't no allege. Allege means I'm alleging that you did something. I don't have any proof right now, or, you know, but I hope to prove that you did something. But in terms of, you know, the court, I'm alleging you did this, and then I'm going to show my evidence. Well, you know, you're not a court when you're a media publication. You don't have to say allegedly if you got the evidence of the crime. You can just say what the crime was. So I don't know why I went off on that tangent, but words are just important. And, you know, it's not that these students feel that Woodrow Wilson was racist. He is racist, or was racist. He's dead now, maybe eaten by worms and tormented in hell, if there is one. But he was a racist. So this is coming to you from csmonitor.com. I linked up to it for you if you want to share it. These student demonstrators and top administrators at New Jersey's prestigious Ivy League school solidified the agreement after members of the Black Justice League student organization staged a 32-hour sit-in outside Princeton President Christopher Eisgruber's office. Mr. Eisgruber said Princeton appreciated the willingness of the students to work with us to find a way forward. And that was in a statement that he put out, an official university statement. The demonstrators demanded the removal of Mr. Wilson's name and image from public squares and a name change for Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. They also wanted the school to establish a cultural competency and diversity training program and select a space for cultural affinity groups. The school now says it will consider removing a mural of Wilson, begin conversations about Wilson's legacy, and boost cultural competency training for faculty. Administrators agreed not to impose any formal disciplinary action against the student protesters who peacefully left the office. So it goes on to give some information about Woodrow Wilson. At the time of his presidency was from 1913 to 1921. So most, yes, United States government had incorporated. So it was, in fact, he was the CEO of USA Inc. at the time. He was considered one of the most prominent leaders of the progressive movement. I mean, I be seeing people today talking about, you know, people who call themselves progressive, but they practice racism. Sometimes they know they practicing racism, or, you know, they may be doing it unconsciously as it was programmed into their subconscious. Whatever the case, there is racism in the so-called progressive movement. So they were saying that this guy was a prominent leader of progressive movement back then. He publicly supported racial segregation, which was legal at the time, and part of public policy in all 50 states. Let's see. While in office, Wilson organized a private screening of the film Birth of a Nation, which was widely criticized by the NAACP at the time and later became a recruiting tool for the Ku Klux Klan. As Boston University professor William Kyler noted in a 2013 article on the university website, this is what he wrote. With quotations from Wilson's scholarly writings in its subtitles, the silent film denounced the Reconstruction period in the South when blacks briefly held elective office in several states. It hailed the rise of the Ku Klux Klan as a sign of Southern white society's recovery from the humiliation and suffering to which the federal government and the Northern carpetbaggers had subjected it after its defeat in the Civil War. The film depicted African Americans, mostly played by white actors in blackface, as uncouth, uncivilized rabble. So, yeah, if you haven't seen or heard of Birth of a Nation, what is that guy's name? I can't think of the guy's name who made that film, but it's on YouTube. And it is a racist film, and he had a private screening for it. So I'm not sure, but there were a number of U.S. senators and even presidents I have read about that were card carrying members of the Klan. And so I think he may have been one of those, but don't quote me on that. But it seems like I read something about that. So Birth of a Nation, let's pull it up. Who made this film? When was it made? In the 1915. It's a three-hour film. It was originally called The Klansman. Let's read some other information about it. The Birth of a Nation, originally called The Klansman, is a 1915 American silent drama film directed by D.W. Griffith and based on the novel and play The Klansman. both by Thomas Dixon Jr. Griffin co-wrote the screenplay with Frankie Woods and co-produced the film with Harry Atkin. All right, so yeah, he had a private screening for the film in the White House for his white supremacist and racist buddies and friends. And so, again, you know, I don't see anything incorrect about these students' demands. And, you know, I know there are some out there that say, you know, let's leave these buildings named after these racist foul beings. Let's leave the names on the buildings. Let's keep the monuments. Let's keep the flags until, you know, the system of white supremacy is gone. Well, you know, that's part of tearing down the system of white supremacy. It's tearing down all elements of it. Eliminating all elements. If it take one brick at a time, if we ain't got a bulldozer to just push the house down all at once or whatever, then, you know, then we could just start chipping away at the foundation until the foundation weakens and it just falls in on itself. Telling people or suggesting that this isn't constructive behavior on part of these students, I think is incorrect and unconstructive. They're doing something. They're not sitting idly by showing, and they're having black self-respect. They're paying money to go here. They may have scholarships, but you only get scholarships because you can bring something to the table to the university. They don't just give you scholarships just for the sake of giving out scholarships or charity or anything like that. They are hoping that you can bring something to that campus community. They're hoping that you might be on the debate team and help them win a debate next year or something, or you might be one of the highly recruited quarterbacks in the nation. They want something from you. That's why they give you scholarships. So let's not act like it's just all based on charity. But if that's your college home, if that's the campus where you go to school at, you have every right to have a say and to make demands on the power structure system and pointing out these incorrect things. I don't see how anybody could say that it's correct behavior to name stuff and honor people who are vile inhumans. I dare to even call them human beings, man. These are some of the most foul, despicable people known to mankind. And you want to honor them, and yeah, you want to make the, you know, and then I hear the excuse, well, it was a different time back then. No. There has always been people opposed to racism, like the NAACP is mentioned, you know, in that article, and telling, you know, that's incorrect. CEO of USA Inc., you shouldn't be screening this Klan movie in your in the White House. Black people built that house. Black people laid out the Washington D.C. You know, Benjamin Banneker, highly skilled black artisans, you know, worked on all this kind of stuff in the Capitol. This is just incorrect, man. And black people pay taxes. They fought in wars, and what you're doing is incorrect. So it's not like, you know, don't fall for that. Oh, that was 100 years ago, or it was acceptable 200 years ago, or 500 years ago. No. It was not acceptable. Acceptable to whom? Acceptable to you? It wasn't acceptable to me. And I'm sure it wasn't acceptable to the victims back then. And there has always been people opposed to slavery, always been people opposed to genocide, always been people opposed to racism and the mistreatment of people based on their skin tones and hair textures and whatnot. So, yeah, I think this is absolutely necessary, because if they don't do it, who will? 20 years from now, more black students will be on their campus, and you know, this white supremacist will be honored and whatnot. That's not making progress, people. That is not making progress. I wish it was. I wish we lived in a world where I didn't come on the radio, you know, every day talking about racism or talking about oppression or talking about slavery. I wish we lived in that world. But guess what? That world is not going to come about if we don't do something to bring it into existence. You speak what you want into words, and then you put action to those words. And these Princeton University students, these students all across the United States, are taking action. And I don't think that any black person should be made to suffer the indignities of having the symbolism of racism thrust in their faces. Where do you think all this hypertension and stuff come from? Why do you think white people think it's okay to keep practicing racism? Because ain't nobody going to do nothing about it. That's why they ain't going to do nothing. Let them complain. Let them whine. They ain't going to do nothing. Well, black people are doing something, and I'm glad that they are. I'm certainly glad that they are. All right, next story. Next story. I don't have anything, no phone calls on it. Next story about this Kentucky judge. I took the last break kind of late. I'm going to take this break kind of early, but then when I come back, we'll talk about the last two stories I'm going to share with you. The Kentucky judge who is finally getting some support. His name is Judge Ulu Stevens, and these prosecutors, racist, trying to get him to recuse himself from all criminal cases because he wants to practice justice and they want to practice slavery. And he trying to, you know, do things correctly, and they want to continue to do things incorrectly, and they want him to go along with the program like many others seem to do. Not seem to do, but are doing. Just going along with the program, not making any waves. Just give me my weekly allotment of butter biscuits, and I won't say anything. You can just do what you want, and I won't oppose you in any manner. So anyway, shout out to him, man, for showing some intestinal fortitude. So we're going to take a break, play some message music, come back on the other side, and continue with these stories. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. Again, I'm on air Monday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has no nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim. And then the criminal who attacked the victim accuses the victim of attacking him. This is American justice. This is American democracy.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Just want to remind you, you can hook up with us on social media. If you're on Twitter, we are at Black Talk Radio, at Black Talk Radio. If you're on Facebook, Black Talk Radio Network. That's facebook.com/Black Talk Radio Network. And we have a number of other pages associated with some of the different programs that we do on the air. Speaking of those programs, Tando Radio Show will not be on air. Dave said yesterday, you know, he has some things to do. Again, his family's in a transition right now. He's been taking Fridays off to work on some of those things. So Tando will not be on air. Race Treaty Radio should be on air at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Race Treaty Radio, hosted by Brother Robin Benton of Anti-Racism Media. He hosts that program. I sometimes chime in with him as I engineer it for him. And then that'll be followed by the Lotus Place. The Lotus Place will be on air at 10 o'clock p.m. as they are every Friday night. They are on air Sundays Wednesdays and Fridays at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. On Fridays, they usually talk about relationships and whatnot, and so they definitely be talking about that tonight. But they also, you know, make time for other news items and, you know, that people need to discuss. But it's Relationship Fridays on The Lotus Place, so make sure you check them out at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Here are just a few news headlines that you can find on either our Twitter page or our Facebook page for Black Talk Radio Network. You have these Louisiana girls who play basketball. I think this is high school team, and they were complaining and boycotting the team because they said that their coach, a white male, was hanging around in the locker room while they supposed to be showering a little bit too much, and he was a little bit too touchy-feely, and they felt uncomfortable around this man. They felt, you know, like they were being violated. And so they, and from the picture, it appears to be all black girls that complained to seven. So they were boycotting the regular season or opener over the coaches' alleged inappropriate behavior. Seven girls from the perennial Louisiana basketball powerhouse have been removed from the team. And that is according to USA Today, HSS.com. I guess that stands for high school sports. USA Today, HS.com is where I link to. Yeah, these girls have been, instead of them being counseled or, you know, a sit down with the coach to explain this and sit down with the parents and to, you know, try to constructively come to a resolution, they just kick these black girls off. And where the feminist people at? Where y'all feminists out there? They need your help. And you ain't got to be a feminist, but you know, where? But you say, you know, that's what your main mission is to stand up for women's rights. Well, what about these women, these young women's rights to not, you know, to be able to shower without worried about some creep peeping on them or touching them and slapping them on their behinds and, you know, that's inappropriate and whatnot. So for a male to be doing females like that. So, yeah, that's one of the stories. Let me see another story. The Chicago Police Department cop. What is his name? I wrote an article about it today. You can find it on blacktalkradionetwork.com. But the cop that killed Laquan McDonald reportedly had a history of using racial slurs and excessive force. Now, reportedly means that, because I was just talking about saying allegedly, reportedly is different than allegedly. Reportedly means that there are reports, there have been complaints filed that this man used racial slurs and excessive force against other victims before he unmercifully gunned down Laquan McDonald, shot him in the back, then shot him 15 more times, according to the coroner's report. And I think this cop, out of all the cops, and it seemed like the cops, just from what I could tell, like they were just trying to talk him down. He didn't have nothing but a little pocket knife. The pocket knife wasn't even illegal. The cops were investigating a report that a man with a knife was trying to break in the vehicle. So when they first made initial contact with him, they didn't rush in. They didn't shoot him. They tried to talk to him to get him to cooperate. He walked away from them. They followed him. They tried to get an officer out there. They had a taser in case they had to use the taser. So I don't know if that guy made it there or not. But this other cop, let's give his name. Names are important, aren't they? Words are important. Names are important. And so so they were trying to talk him down. And this one cop by the name of Jason Van Dyke, just decided, I've had enough, I'm just going to shoot him down. Shot him in his back while he was walking away from the police, not running towards them with the knife in his hand and coming down in a stabbing motion to put them people in fear for their life. No, he was walking away from them when Mr. Van Dyke said, you know, I ain't having this. This nigga think he is. And he gunned him down. gunned him down, shot him in the back, and then they said continued to shoot him. Why, after the 17-year-old Mr. McDonald went down on the ground. So that's a story that I think this guy, they've been investigating this for a year, man. And the reason I wrote about it is because the Cook County judge just ordered that the city does have to release the video, and they don't have any show cause that the video shouldn't be subjected to the public. Meaning the public has a right to view public records. That is a public record. It was captured on police cameras and whatnot. And the city decided, well, we're just gonna quit trying to fight this. But this cop, man, Van Dyke, has been on death duty ever since. This has been going on, I think, for over a year. It don't take that long, people, to do investigations. So that's just a couple of the news stories that you should check out. Oh, and one last one I want to share with you. I was looking up some information on Hillary Clinton. May she never sniff the White House again, unless, you know, she's just visiting along with other tourists and whatnot. But she don't need to be in that place. No. Anyway, I was looking up some information. I was doing some research, and this came up. I wasn't even looking for this. But this is an article that I thought should have been big-time news that, you know, maybe they were talking about it, maybe they weren't. I didn't hear any of the conversations. But you know how Hillary Clinton's always reminding us that she's a woman, right? As if we didn't know that already. But every chance she gets, let me tell you how I'm different from these other presidential candidates. I'm a woman. Wow. Really? Really? Okay. Anyway, I found a story that just goes to show that this woman, like I've said, cannot be trusted on anything that she says she will do. She is just a pathological liar. So anyway, y'all know how she tell everybody she's a woman and how she supports, you know, equal rights for equal pay for women and all of that. But this newspaper called the Free Beacon did a analysis of her campaign records, and they were only able to look at the month of May and June. That was the only two full months of available data when they published their article back in August. Okay, so it's August, September, October. Okay, it's been 2 months, going on 3 months since this came out. And, you know, I'm like, dang, man, I thought I was, like, pretty plugged in. How come I didn't hear about this? But they analyzed 2 months of her public payroll records for her campaign. And let me just share this information with y'all, because Hillary Clinton says she supports equal pay, equal rights for women, and all of that. But it says that in both May and June, the only two full months of available data since the campaign launched, the median salary of a female on Clinton's staff was found to be far smaller than that of a man. In May, women on her staff earned 88 cents for each dollar that was earned by men. In June, the campaign staff grew by 55 employees, and women fared even worse, earning just 87 cents for each dollar earned by men. When projected out to reflect annual salary figures, it was calculated that the median annual salary for a woman would be about $7,000 less than the median male salary. Wow, man. How is this? What's that female name that's on MSNBC? Rachel Maddow. Did Rachel Maddow ask her about that in the last debates that they had? Anybody been questioning her over this? And I know when I share, you know, the meme that I made of her with this information linking to the source, not too many people seem to be interested in the fact that Hillary Clinton is a freaking liar. She's a freaking hypocrite, and she can't be trusted on anything. And it just, again, I'm going to keep talking about these black proxy racist tools that is escorting her around to meet the mothers and fathers of dead black children. who want to shepherd her in to these churches, black churches, and then want to shush and shout down Black Lives Matter protesters when they want to call her on her BS. That's just, yeah, but where my genderism folks at that like to vote for people just based on identity politics? How do y'all feel about that as women out there? That this woman who certainly, you know, she had a child. We know she's a woman and whatnot. And, you know, this woman who has been paying all this lip service to equal rights for women didn't think that women on her campaign working for her to elect her president didn't feel like they deserve to be paid equally in comparison to the males on her staff. I mean, that's a big deal considering how she making a big deal out of the fact that she a woman. So, you know, again, if you a black person, you ain't got no reason to vote for this woman unless you profiting off of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. If you a woman, you ain't got no reason to support this woman because she's a woman. Because her personal activity shows that she ain't nothing but all talk and no action. I would even say, I wonder if the Lilly Ledbetter Act that was passed under President Obama that, you know, says that, you know, you're supposed to pay women the same rates of pay that you would pay a man that has equal experience and background and whatnot, that you couldn't keep, you know, practicing wage discrimination against women. I wonder if her campaign is, I don't know if that applies to just the federal government, federal contractors, or what. But Hillary Clinton is not even adhering to federal law. Again, I don't know that it covers, but you wouldn't think that this woman would need a law telling her to pay women equally. But I just couldn't pass up a chance to share this information with you about the world's most dangerous woman on the planet. Because she is. She's dangerous, man. She's dangerous. She's a killer, man. She's a war criminal and whatnot. So let me move on. I don't know if y'all can tell, but I just really, really do not like Hillary Clinton. Do not like her whatsoever. I wouldn't even meet her if I got an invitation to come to a town hall, and I wouldn't even want to meet her. I don't want to shake her hand. I don't want to talk to her about abolitionism. I don't want to, no, because I know you can't be trusted. I know you're a lie to my face, all right? And then once get through using me, you're going to do what you always intended to do, and that's keep practicing slavery. So this woman ain't trustworthy to even sit down at a round table with and try to negotiate with. She can't be trusted on anything. That's evident. Not because I'm saying it, because that's what the evidence shows, that this woman can't be trusted. She don't even care about women. So let's move on to this story about this Kentucky judge. Shout out to Judge Olu Stevens, doing the right thing, countering racism up there in that county that he's in. So let's pull up this story, see if we can cue up this video, the audio to this video. This Jefferson Circuit Court judge. Again, this is in Kentucky. This report is coming to you from WDRB, which is based out of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm just waiting on the video to load up and the page to stop loading so that I can then access the video and so we can hear what they have to say since they on the ground there. Let me just share some of this information because some of these pages, man, there it go. All right, let's see if we can get this to play. It's loading up. Probably get hit with an ad, but that's okay. They got to pay for
Not enough diversity in Louisville jury pools. Attorneys and city leaders now backing a judge's decision to bring the issue to light.
WDRB's Danielle Lama explains their support comes as prosecutors ask that the judge be removed from all criminal cases.
Prosecutors say the judge's social media posts about the Commonwealth's attorney show he's biased, but some are saying that the courtroom controversy is just a distraction.
Judge Olu Stevens didn't hear any cases Thursday morning. They were all pushed to another day, but we're told he met with supporters behind closed doors.
I praise Judge Stevens for bringing attention to the matter.
That matter Louisville attorney Don Elliott is referring to is a lack of diversity in Louisville jury pools. Last year, Judge Stevens dismissed a jury for a black defendant because it didn't include any African Americans. The Commonwealth's Attorney's Office asked the Supreme Court to decide if he had the power to do so. It's the judge's social media posts in response that have led to this week's controversy in the courtroom. Commonwealth's Attorney Tom Wine says Stevens accused him of seeking all-white juries. In his request to have the judge removed from all criminal cases, Wine writes, that Judge Stevens has presumed and proceeded to tell the world through social media that my actions were dictated by discriminatory attitudes not only offends me, but leads me to reasonably conclude that Judge Stevens cannot be fair and impartial on cases in which I or my assistants are involved.
I think that the Facebook discussion is a distraction from the real issue. The issue here is why diverse jury and panels are important in Jefferson County.
Several Louisville attorneys and city leaders are standing behind Judge Stevens.
I represent a diverse district that is comprised of people of color, poor people, people of all cross-sections of our community, and those individuals deserve to be able to walk into a courtroom and to know that there may be a judge who's on the bench who may take issue with a panel that is not reflective of our entire community.
While the judge's secretary says he doesn't grant interviews, his supporters indicate he'll continue to defend himself.
So I think he's in good spirits. He'll continue to move forward and serve the public in the way that he's been elected to do, and I think that we will be a better community as a result of that.
Chief Justice John Minton will decide if Stevens is removed from all criminal cases. We're told that the justice is out of town this week and won't review the request until next week. Reporting live outside the Judicial Center, I'm Danielle Lama, WDRB News.
Again, this is a terrible problem. That is a historic problem. You know, all these white juries, all white juries, not reflecting of the community. All right. Black people pay taxes, black people register to vote, black people got driver's license and whatnot, and they should be in jury pools. And we know just from a study of history, and not old history, but recent history, that that's a problem in this country. And that some states even enacted laws to where you couldn't do that. You just can't see an all-white jury. Now, I would take it a step further. I'm not going to sit up there and say, because obviously I would be incorrect, it would be incorrect statement on my part, that white people are incapable of rendering justice. Okay, I can't say that. There's nobody that can prove that without 100%, you know, accuracy. You can't do it. You can't say that. All right? But we know that from scientific studies that have examined the psychology of white people and put them through tests and saying that a lot of white people, the majority of white people, have implicit bias, meaning that they're racist. They have racist attitudes and whatnot. And these prosecutors know that. And that's why they work to strike every black juror off the panel. They know this. And so this man is tripping. This white prosecutor trying to get this judge, and the judge never said anything. I was reading the Facebook post that Judge Stevens made. He didn't name that man by name. He made a general statement. He didn't say the prosecutor. He didn't say this or he didn't say that. He made a general statement about history will judge something to be incorrect in terms of white juries. So he ain't single out this man or anything. He didn't single out any of his assistants or whatnot. And this is just a continuation of we see white people who we suspect of practicing racism or playing the victim card. Oh, whoa, it's me. I'm being victimized. And even though I seated an all-white jury and I don't live in an all-white county, and you know, he dismissed that jury, and he's saying that, you know, we shouldn't be having all-white juries. He's victimizing me. He's suggesting that I may be practicing racism and all this and that. See, I'm noticing a pattern. Not that this isn't anything new. For a very long time, they, you know, you got these white racist suspects that like to play the victim card, that they accuse black people of playing all the time. But I'm starting to see that a lot. I'm starting to see it a lot on social media, in corporate media, in different types of media outlets. I'm starting to, from these stories, I'm starting to see a pattern of primarily white males whining and crying because nobody is allowing them to practice racism unopposed. And so they're trying to flip it and say that we're the ones that's being victimized. But again, like I've talked about in the past, every person who is in a jury pool, I don't care their racial classification, I don't care their socioeconomic status, I don't care their religious affiliations or political affiliation, I don't care about any of that. Every last single person seated on a jury or in a jury pool should be mandatory that they take an implicit bias test. Okay, I believe, you know, just a standardized test to test, because I do believe that. I know some people say, you know, black people can't practice racism, and I agree with that when we're talking about a system or whatnot, but individually, we do have our own biases. Let's just be real about it. Let's just be, you know, let's just tell the truth about it. I certainly have my biases, you know, whenever I'm around white men out here in public with scraggly beards and dressed in camouflage with get her done hats on, I'm keeping an eye on them. I'm watching them. I don't want them standing behind me. No, sir, you go right ahead, pay for your items, and I'm watching you till you get out the store. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't want them behind me. I'm watching them intently. You know, I have a bias, man, against these white Southern males around here. I got a bias against people that like to deflate display the Confederate flag on their license plates or fly them from the back of their trucks and what the hell. It's their First Amendment right, you know, but I also look at it as an act of terrorism, an act of visual aggression against me. And I got a bias against potential terrorists, man. So we all have our biases. Let's not act like we don't. So I feel like it would be totally appropriate to implement these implicit bias testing for all jury pools. And then, you know, we could say then, you know, we could disqualify people based off of the result of their tests. And then we can get them help. Not only will we prevent them from, you know, sitting on a jury where they can practice injustice. No, we can actually then say, hey, you can't sit on the jury pool because you have this implicit bias going on, and you may have autism because we notice the brain patterns or whatnot of people who are racist and people who got autism. Their brain patterns are kind of the same and, you know, on the same wavelength there. So maybe some, you know, treatment for autism can help you with your implicit bias or something. We don't know, but you need some help, but you can't sit on the jury. I'm sorry. Can't do it because, you know, that we're trying to impanel a fair, to use one of their words, impartial jury. Okay. So we ain't looking for a fair jury, which is, you know, fair skin, all white people. We looking for an impartial jury. Impartial jury that isn't infected with racism or any kind of other biases that would prevent them from rendering a just verdict. So shout out to Judge Stevens. You hang strong in there, bro. Let me see, the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. Let's see, what is this guy's name? I don't see his name. He was mentioned in the report. Maybe we need to be tracking him. Well, not maybe we need to be. This is why I say we should be tracking people. We need to be tracking politicians, public office holders, police in our areas. We need to be following their Facebook pages, their Twitter accounts, their private pages, you know, their personal pages and whatnot. We need to be gathering intelligence on these people. So let's see what we can dig up on this white prosecutor up there that's trying to prevent Judge Stevens from practicing justice from the bench, who thinks it's perfectly appropriate to see all white juries in judgment of black people. Again, it shouldn't be about race, but unfortunately, it is about racism. And since there aren't any safeguards to keep racists off the bench, out the jury box, then we need implicit bias testing. And we need it right away. Need it for cops. We need it for, anybody that's going to be in a job that they're interacting with the public and their decisions have a tremendous influence on the lives of the citizens. We can't be playing around, man. We got to get serious about implementing a system of justice, because it ain't going to implement itself. I can tell you that right now. It's not going to happen on its own. It's going to have to be something that people fight for. All right, the last story that I want to share with you. Prosecutors in mixed Michigan. Let's keep talking about these crooked prosecutors, right? So, last story that I want to share with you as we get ready to close up the broadcast. It's coming to you from the Intercept.com. This is an independent media outlet put together by a couple of journalists, mainstream corporate journalists who turn their backs, so to speak, on the corporate model of news and started their own outlet called the Intercept.com. And this story comes to you from them. It says, Michigan prosecutors pressured lab on medical marijuana results. Let me just read this to you. The Michigan State Police Forensic Science Division finds itself embroiled in scandal as newly released emails paint a picture of a crime lab in turmoil over how to classify marijuana. Quick question. Shouldn't all email records, all emails sent back and forth by these public employees, these people that's getting paid by taxpayers, I feel like all their records should be open to the public, that we should be able to go in at any given time and demand emails printed off. Yeah, we'll pay for the paper and, whatever, how much ever you're going to charge us, because we know, it takes time out for somebody to do that and it costs money to print them out. But we want these emails from such and such date to such and such date. From the entire police department, or from the chief, or from whoever, from the crime lab, we want to see. Yeah, I think it should be transparency, right? It shouldn't just be the president or the vice president of USA Inc. whose emails should be open to public scrutiny. I think it should be on the state level as well. These are public employees. They don't have a right to privacy, not when it comes to the people's business. The people have a right to know what's going on. So there's just a thought there. I don't know if we can actually do that. See, because there are laws and ordinances and stuff in place that we don't even know about, man. Just like those activists in Cleveland found out that, hey, they ain't got to sit around and wait for this prosecutor to convene a grand jury or get through with this investigation that's taken years. No, we can just have this judge. We can present the evidence and whatnot and have the judge do it. Now, the judge, skirted his responsibility, but, hey, that's what the law say. Now, it's up to them to force the judge to do his job. But we don't know. It probably is some open records. I would imagine that emails would fall under the open records laws, right? So anyway, these emails, according to The Intercept, paint a picture of a crime lab in turmoil over how to classify cannabis. They use the word marijuana. I choose to use the scientific word cannabis. Attorneys and medical cannabis advocates accuse Michigan prosecutors of pressuring the state's crime lab to falsely classify the origins of THC found in hash oils and cannabis edibles as origin unknown. Prosecutors exploited the let me see. No, what they exploited was the ambiguity of to charge medical cannabis users for possession of synthetic THC, despite the fact that the personal use of medical cannabis has been legal in Michigan since it was approved by voters in 2008. Under Michigan law, possession of synthetic THC constitutes a felony, whereas possession of cannabis and its derivatives by someone who is not a licensed medical cannabis user is a misdemeanor. So, what they're trying to do is say that, you know, we found these cookies or we found this weed or whatever, and but we found this hash oil that somebody was using to treat their epilepsy or whatnot. We found it. We know it's coming from a natural source, but we want you to put in there that, you know, the source was unknown. So we can then say that, oh, this is synthetic THC. See, because natural THC hasn't been outlawed, but synthetic THC, see what I'm saying, people? The tax dollars that are being wasted by these prosecutors to unjustly put people into slavery, to put charges on them, criminal charges. This is a conspiracy right here to commit a crime. This is a conspiracy among prosecutors and any of the crime lab employees who went along with it. This is a conspiracy, man, to what's a word we could use, a charge? Obstruction of justice. Yeah, we could file this one under obstruction of justice. This isn't, they are obstructing justice by trying to fix the evidence. These are crimes, people. This isn't a civil offense. This is a criminal offense. We're talking about people losing their freedom. Losing their freedom. Losing money. Losing property. Behind these crooked prosecutors. So you can read the rest of it. Well, look, the emails were obtained by Michael Corman, lead lawyer for Max Lorenz, a medical cannabis patient who lost custody of his child and now faces felony charges after the lab's misleading classification of hash oil found in his home. I've never seen a lab report reporting origin unknown, Corman told The Intercept. What was produced for us was the most unbelievable set of documents I've ever seen. The email showed that as Michigan forensic scientists debated how to classify oil and wax produced by cannabis plants, they were pressured by police and prosecutors to classify the products in a way that would facilitate harsher drug convictions. See, there you go. See, that's that loophole. That's that they always create a loophole when we're talking about slavery. And that's the loophole that Hillary Clinton was talking about, where you got Bernie Sanders saying, let's end federal prohibition on cannabis, period. Let's just remove it from the DEA schedule list of drugs. You know, what did Hillary Clinton do? What did she say? No, let's not go that far. Let's just, you know, knock it down a classification to Schedule 2 instead of Schedule 1. Why doesn't she want it removed? Period. Even though all of these states have legalized recreational use of cannabis as well as medical use of cannabis, we see in Colorado and Washington and other states, they are raking in the money from the taxes on this stuff that they're able. One article I read is they may be giving everybody in Washington state a refund, a tax refund, because they're making so much money or generating so much revenue in tax off of legalized cannabis. You know, but no, she wants to continue to leave it as a criminal offense regulated by the federal government so they can continue to put people into prison slavery. She ain't slick. I peeped her game long time ago. And that's what they done here in Michigan. Oh, we gonna legalize, the voters want us to legalize cannabis. But what we're going to do is we're going to outlaw synthetic cannabis. The fake stuff or whatever. Which I do understand that when it came out, because, you know, that's why I say by not regulating cannabis, by not taxing it and making it legal and subjecting it to certain FDA standards, even though we can argue about that. But people can, you know, are being put at risk by the federal government if they are forced to go on the street to purchase their medicine from, you know, somebody that's selling in the underground and whatnot, or they're risking themselves by, you know, growing their own or whatnot. This is just ridiculous, people. This is a waste of taxpayers' money. This is a conspiracy to put people into modern day slavery and human trafficking. And this is a crime. This is a crime. This is an obstruction of justice. These people should be up on charges right now. And this just happened. This was just revealed earlier this month. This is why I'm saying we need, on an individual community basis, is we need to be setting up. Maybe it could be national and we just have chapters. But we need new abolitionist lawyers, man. We need to start our own. ACLU, they ain't doing all they could do. NAACP Legal Defense Front, they ain't doing all they could do. So we need a legal organization that will deploy lawyers where we would go in a place like this and we'd be filing charges on these people. We will be suing them under RICO laws, organized crime. That's what we need to be doing. So that's just my two cents on it. Anyway, that is all the news that I have for you today. Thank you for hanging out with me today on Black Talk Radio News. Again, just a reminder, Tando Radio Show is still taking Fridays off. So Brother Dave, L.A. Dave, won't be on air today. But tonight, check out the program Race Treaty. Race Treaty, hosted by Robin Benton of Anti-Racism Media, which will be followed by The Lotus Place. Sister Black Rose is the host of that program. All right, so that is what's on tap for tonight. And remember, you can always find live streaming, other internet radio stations, podcasts from different producers. You can find all that on blacktalkradionetwork.com. And, you know, go ahead and subscribe to the entire blog and you'll never miss an update. All right, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines of USA Inc., that it's a battlefield out there. It's Battlefield America. Casualties are being created every day. They trying to make slaves of people every day. So you need to develop battlefield awareness. You need to develop battlefield skills to decrease the likelihood that you'll be one of their victims. There's no guarantee, but you can certainly take steps that that will decrease the likelihood. And that's just what it's all about, is increasing your chances of survival. So, with that said, be safe out there over the weekend. Peace and blessings to all.
Descending from the tribes of Africa, inspired by the great black leaders.
Dynamic, articulate, perceptive, courageous, outspoken. We'll be right back.